This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. It's a city of 7,000 in France, and by the end of this week, it will be no more. It's the sound of migrants and refugees of the Calais temporary city called the Jungle, packing up their possessions and heading to a government processing center to be sent to different locations around France. The three-day operation will erase the shacks and tents crammed into a 1.5 square mile camp that can possibly be glimpsed from inside the space-age Eurostar trains traveling the Channel Tunnel, linking France and Britain.
The life here is not good, where I was in the jungle.
But the link between these migrants and the UK is not part of the deal, although many wish it were so.
I'll sleep on the street if they remove the camp. I will not move one inch from here. Just I have one hope, is just to get to the UK, and I don't have any other option.
Caroline Gregory has been volunteering for Calais Action for the past year. She says that the somber process of moving once again is underway for these refugees.
Because this has been a while in coming, they're now quite resigned to the fact that the jungle, as it's known, is going to finish. There's also a sense of hopelessness, especially among those who've been here for a long time, maybe up to a year, because they've not managed their goal of getting to the UK, and now they're going to be moved elsewhere in France, where obviously there's no chance at all that they can reach the UK. So among some of them there is definitely a sense of despair and hopelessness.
Why would it be impossible for them to get to the UK if they have some sort of immigrant papers in France so that they could go and apply in Britain? I mean, is the papers that they're going to receive in France ban them essentially from going to the UK?
If they claimed asylum in France, eventually they would be able to travel to the UK. But the problem is that the asylum system is so backed up that it could take years for their papers to come through. So, of course, if you're young or if you've got, for example, even children in the UK, then you're not going to want to wait.
Caroline, how many people have been moved so far, and what does it look like as you're watching?
It's very difficult to say exactly how many people have been moved because there's no official way of counting who goes in, who goes out, whether they're the same people or not. The French authorities are saying that around 2,000 people have gone on the buses so far. But it's difficult to tell, and it's difficult to verify that.
And the actual dismantling of structures, who's responsible for that, and how's that going?
That hasn't really begun yet. So there have been concerns overnight that there are still a lot of children in the camp, even children by themselves. So they haven't actually begun dismantling shelters yet. That's expected to start early tomorrow morning.
Have you spoken with kids? What do they say?
Yes, it's been quite concerning the past couple of days. I've spoken to quite a lot of children in there, and a lot of them are really scared. They don't know. They've not been given proper information by anybody as to what's happening. A lot of them, they don't understand where they're supposed to go to register, and they've been given different information by, for example, the French authorities and the UK volunteers. Some of them are really quite scared as to what their future holds at the moment.
And these are individuals from a variety of countries around the Middle East and North Africa. Give me a sense of the people who you've encountered.
So most of the refugees in the camp are from Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and then Eritrea and Sudan in Africa. Those are the main nationalities. And then there's, you know, some small groups from other places, but those are the main ones.
Have you ever, in the course of your experience there, discovered any sense of radicalization taking place, of individuals who are filled with anger because of their situation and an anger that they might take out on their countries of destination?
It's worth remembering that the reason many of these refugees are here is that they are fleeing ISIS, Daesh and the Taliban. So they are even bigger enemies of ISIS than we are in the West. The only chance that they would ever have of becoming radicalized is if the very poor treatment of them here in Europe continues. You know, that's the only thing that I see that could potentially radicalize them.
Caroline, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Caroline Gregory is a journalist in Calais and a volunteer with Calais Action.
But you say you have another house for all people young After that, you go to UK, but I don't know.
Al-Aldia, a 14-year-old Sudanese refugee in Calais, is still holding out hope of making it to London. Over 1,000 unaccompanied minors are still waiting to be processed as part of the jungle's demolition. But where do they go? Answering that question is to take a page from the life of Lord Dubs, Labour Party peer in the House of Lords, who was a refugee from the Nazi takeover of Czechoslovakia in 1939. He was part of the Kinder Transport Program. Lord Dubs says only 200 or so have managed to make it through the human pipeline to the UK.
The world has changed enormously. Attitudes to migration, attitudes to refugees have changed. So we're looking at something that's rather different. But have we learned the lessons of the past? Probably not. In 1938-39, Britain took 10,000 unaccompanied child refugees on the Kinder Transport from Germany, Austria and Czechoslovakia, because I was one of them. And at that time, all other European countries said no. And indeed, even the United States, with your very generous immigration policies at that time, even the United States said no to these children. So they all came to Britain.
And as you've seen the situation in Calais, how would you describe the main differences between then and now?
I suppose anybody who is Jewish, I'm half Jewish, was fleeing the Holocaust. So maybe we were fleeing something even more dreadful, which was the gas chambers. However, I've been to Calais twice, and it is very shocking that in a modern, affluent continent like Europe, we have people living in such dreadful squalor. Many young people living in a state of danger, where there are criminals about who can draw them into criminality, prostitution, and so on. So I think it is shocking that we've had the situation in Calais for so long. I'm glad that we're now beginning to do something there.
And what do you make of the insistence that so many of them want to come to the UK?
Well, at one level, it's a little bit puzzling. I think they're saying the chances of getting a job in the UK are greater than getting one in France. I think the people traffickers, some of whom are in the camp in Calais, we believe, have actually said to people, you know, go to the UK. That way they can get some money out of them for helping them across the channel, if that's possible. And partly, I think the authorities, I suppose the French authorities, failed to tell the people arriving in Calais what their rights would be if they stayed in France, their rights to claiming asylum.
You've described how different then is from now. As you look at some of the children in Calais, as you visited, do you see yourself in some of their eyes? Do you see history repeating itself?
Well, you know, it's difficult to describe in words what a dreadful situation it is. Now, look, from my point of view, if I hadn't got out of Czechoslovakia, then I suppose, like a lot of people are Jewish, most people I would have ended up in the gas chambers. So to that extent, I was escaping a terrible fate. On the other hand, my mother simply put me on a train and I was whisked to England on an interminably long train journey. Now, the ones in Calais have had very long, difficult journeys. Some of them have taken a year to get from Middle East or wherever it is. That's what they've said to me. And they're now living in a state where they don't know what the future holds for them. So their present physical situation is abominable, absolutely shocking.
Tell me the story of someone who described their journey you got a sense of how long their journey has been.
So this is somebody who actually got to England. He got to England illegally on the back of a truck. He was Syrian. I met him on the outside the parliament. He'd seen his family killed by bombs in Damascus. He'd got to Jordan, decided that there was no future for him in a camp in Jordan, and spent a year traveling from Jordan by the complicated route to Calais, and then got himself on the back of a truck and ended up in London. He was speaking a bit of English, and this is a light-hearted bit of relief. He said to me his ambition was to become a politician, pointing at the Palace of Westminster.
Did you express some admiration to that? My goodness, on the back of a truck to screaming in question time, that would be quite a journey in and of itself.
Well, he was about 16. Well, I said to him, you'll have to learn a bit more English so that you can become a politician here. And I said, you better meet a few politicians to make sure they don't change your ambition. But good luck to you. I hope you make it.
I mean, you didn't have any sense talking to this young man that he would become a radicalized militant who would attack Britain.
None at all. I wouldn't have thought so. Look, it's always possible. I've had many supportive emails and letters through my campaign to get unaccompanied child refugees to the UK. But I had one letter. It said, "You want these children to come here? They'll all become terrorists like you." So I thought I was gave it a slightly light touch. Unfortunately, the letter was anonymous and I couldn't answer it. But look, on the whole, people are supportive. And I think I met quite a lot of Afghans and Syrians and so on, both in Calais and the ones that have made it here. And they all seem to me people who are bewildered and shocked by their experiences, but who want to make something of their lives, go to school and develop careers and earn money. That's what I think their emotions are now. Obviously, there are people around who want to radicalize impressionable people, and we have to be on the alert for that.
What's your chief worry about the situation in Calais right now and over the next 48 hours?
One of my major concerns is that there's still a lot of children there. They're very vulnerable. Some of them still have the right and can come to this country, and I hope that'll happen quickly. Every day spent there is an intolerable extra day of uncertainty and fear for them. And of course, there's still adults there. And again, they may well be refugees as well, having fled from torture and persecution, threat of torture and death and war and persecution and so on. And I think, frankly, for the people in Calais, it's been a difficult situation because not everybody behaves well and some of them have behaved rather badly. And the people in Calais also don't want this situation to continue.
The Right Honourable Lord Dubs is Labour Party peer in the House of Lords. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.